guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with Dan Jacobs and Travis Miguel, the guitarists from the band Atreyu. In our conversation, the two talk about living in Southern California and having the other members of the band spread across the world, and the logistics of rehearsal, production, and recording, and they discuss their upcoming tour with Seven Dust. The two share their thoughts on their new album, The End Is Not the End, and the performances on the album, including the crazy vocals. The two take us through their live rigs, which are all digital, Neural DSP Quad Cortexes, and what the benefits are working with them, and they take us through their guitars and their endorsements, and signature instruments from Kiesel for Dan, and Balaguer for Travis. Dan talks a little bit about a company he works for, Plugins Keychains, and the two give us the history of the band and their punk roots, and how the name of the band came about from the movie The Never Ending Story. They also take us through their guitar influences. The two talk about their spare time, craft, cocktails, saxophone, piano, and film. To find out more about Dan and Travis and their band Atreyu, you can go to their website, atreyumerch.com. That's AtreyuMerch.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. And hey, if you want to support the show, I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/haveguitarwilltravelpodcast. Here's my friends, Dan and Travis. Well, Dan and Travis, nice to meet both of you.
Yeah, you too, James.
And you guys are the guitar team from Atreyu.
Yes.
Very good.
And that would be us.
Are you guys both in Southern California right now? Hence the tank top?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in Orange County, Southern California, and Dan's up in Simi Valley, which, I mean, geographically, they're not that far, but because of Southern California traffic, he may as well be in another state.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
How long does it take to get from Orange County to Simi Valley?
If there's no traffic, I mean, if you get like a clean shot, you could do an hour and 15. Okay. But like on average, you're looking an hour and a half to 2 hours. Uh-huh. More if it's like really bad traffic, you go in like the middle of rush hour.
Wow. And yeah. Collectively, when you guys get together, where do you guys rehearse?
Usually it depends on wherever the tour starts, because we're all scattered about. Our singers in Nashville, our drummers in the San Diego area, and our bass players all the way out in Germany.
Wow.
So so we're all over the place. But like, for example, this tour coming up next week, it starts in Milwaukee. So we're all meeting up in Madison and then rehearsing for a little while before that, and then getting all of our stuff together, like, you know, basically putting the show together.
Uh-huh.
And ironing out all the little kinks and going over, you know, transitions and stuff like that.
And how much time does it take to get all that production together?
A day, really.
Oh, okay.
If everything goes well, about a day.
Yeah.
We tend to usually take longer than we think we are.
Okay.
But that's just the nature of the beast, you know?
Sure. You know, apart from you guys just playing, what production is involved? Like, is there a whole light show and stuff that goes along with it, or not so much?
I think it just depends on what we're doing. But yeah, on average, yeah, we usually try to bring out some sort of light package. On some of the shows that we have coming up here, we're going to have some pyro, to kind of make things a little bit extra.
Yeah.
I mean, anything to make the show, you know, feel a little bit more than just guys standing up on stage and playing, you know, we want to, you know, accent moments and stuff like that. And
exactly.
Make it feel, it's a show, you know, so make it a little bit more theatrical, you know, it's a show.
And the venue is that you guys are playing, what size venues are you guys playing?
Anyone from like 800 to 1200, would you say, Dan?
Yeah. Maybe even upwards of maybe 1800 on like the bigger side ones. We're going out with Seven Dust, so it's a multiple band effort in traveling around here and touring on our new record, and them got a new record too, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're both slinging some new records and getting out there.
Your new record is The End Is Not the End, correct?
Yeah,
right on. It's a fantastic record, and it's
funny.
Just listening to Brandon sing, it's not funny. It makes me hurt in my throat.
but the that he has the ability to do the, and he does do the, he does both parts, the growl and the actual singing.
Not for every song. Okay. We have a he does do the majority, obviously, of the singing. Uh-huh. And then he does some of the growls, and then the rest of the growls are all Porter.
Okay.
He's your bass player. So there's a multiple vocal effort to just keep things interesting, adds an extra dynamic, and it's kind of been a signature thing that we've been doing through our whole career, having multiple vocalists.
Oh, right on, right on. And you guys have songs that are very, very hard, and then you have songs like All For You, which is almost a pop song.
Yeah. That's yeah. I mean, the chorus is kind of almost like pop country melody, yeah, essentially. But then the rest of the song is just kind of heavy and kind of got a more metallic kind of, you know, Swedish almost metal vibe to it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For those of us that know what Swedish metal is.
Yeah.
Which isn't me. So when you guys go out, are we talking about Kempers? Are we talking, is there volume on stage? Do you guys play through amps, or are we just playing through Kempers?
We're all on digital. We've been using the Quad Cortex by Neural DSP. In this day and age, the whole modeling world, the digital world, has gotten so advanced.
Sure.
And, it's damn near close to the point where it's very, very, very hard to tell the difference between the analog stuff and the digital stuff. And, just for ease of touring, it makes the most sense. You know, we're not lugging around a bunch of cabinets or worrying about, you know, the amplifiers and, you know, all the parts of an amplifier, like, you know, fuses and transistors and the digital stuff, it's very consistent every day.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you're using an analog amp, it can be, you know, depending on the power in the room, it might sound different from one day to the next. So there's no, there's more of a consistency thing, which for us as players just makes us feel a little better. It's one less thing to worry about.
Yeah.
And it also makes our crew a lot happier too, because they're not flopping in a bunch of big road cases or anything. Yeah. So, but you know, like in a perfect world, like if we had, you know, endless amounts of money, it would be kind of cool to actually use amps. But just for the sake of convenience and everything, and logistics, and financial reasons too.
Sure.
It just makes the most sense to have, you know, just a little unit up on the stage and set it and forget it, and you're good to go.
Yeah. And are you guys using wirelesses and or are you guys using all in-ears on stage?
Yeah. Yeah. Wirelesses, in-ears, anything to give us as much freedom as possible on stage, so we're not limited to being, tied to being in front of our mics or our amps or anything like that.
Yeah.
And we're pretty animated.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. When the guitar tones make a radical shift from, like, you know, dirt to clean, are those preset into the modeler? So like, click, there's a set to a click or something, so it makes that change immediately?
No, we don't. We had one tour where it was set up like that, where it's basically set up to MIDI, where you can just time code everything and have it change your pedals for you and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, we did it for one tour and it was fantastic, and it's definitely on our list of things to do on the upcoming tours, because the amount of pedal dancing that we have to do at times, especially Travis. Travis is he's kind of the backbone of more of the effects and stuff when it comes to, I'm a little bit more straightforward, just cleaner distortion, and he's more of the textures. So for his own personal sanity, that's even an incredible thing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's, you know, like to have just a clean canvas of a stage where if your stuff's all hooked up to MIDI, you don't even need the unit on the front stage, just living in a rack off to the side of the stage. And there's definitely like a, you know, if I'm on the stage right and I've got a lead coming up or I got to switch to a clean, I don't have to run to the other side of the stage and clumsily fumble, you know, hitting these buttons with my foot and stuff like that. But the only thing is, like, we're all pretty gear stupid. We don't know how to set up the whole MIDI thing, so we usually have to get somebody to do it for us. Which can be a process if you're trying to program it to a whole like headlining set or any set in general, really. Yeah. But you know, eventually we'll get off our lazy asses and get somebody else to do it for us.
Well, I have trouble getting on Zoom, so I feel for you. And how quiet is it on stage?
Pretty quiet. I mean, just drums, really. It's it's kind of a disappointment if you're a friend or family or fan that stands on the side of the stage to watch us. You're like, oh, it's gonna be neat. I mean, the perspective's neat,
yeah,
but like visually, but as far as sound, all you really hear is just a lot of drums, and you can kind of hear a little bit of what's coming out of the PA or the crowd singing.
Yep. And of course, when you recorded the record, are you using live amps, or are you still using modelers for that?
A little bit of both. We kind of made the conscious decision for this record because a lot of the more modern, like, you know, metalcore bands nowadays are, you know, it's all digital and everything is very pristine and very huge sounding, which is sure. Awesome.
Yeah.
Everything's very perfect. But I think it's gotten to the point now where a lot of the bands are starting to sound the same, because they're using the same handful of producers. They're using the same plugins, the same snare sounds. Again, absolutely nothing wrong with it. Like, we've gone down that road as well.
Sure. Yeah.
But we kind of wanted to differentiate ourselves from what's going on right now and kind of get more of the feeling of four or five guys jamming in a room. You know, like, the guitars sound like there was a mic put in front of a cabinet.
Yeah.
You know, the drums sound like they were recorded in an actual room, which
yeah.
they were.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you know, it kind of harkens back to like a lot of the stuff that we grew up on, because the stuff we grew up on, there was no like digital recording really. Not yet anyway. There's something about the more organic sound that just hits harder. Not to say that it's like heavier than what's going on in the modern world with, you know, all the digital stuff, but it's like a different kind of heavy to my ears. And I've been missing that for sure.
Yeah. Right on. And what about guitars? What guitars are you using in the studio and then on stage?
I'm personally a Kiesel guy as of right now. I have a signature model, the Hyperdrive. Yeah. You can kind of see him in the back over here. These kind of shapes, kind of a Gibson Explorer-ish shape,
yeah.
I guess would be the most kind of famous one that you would reference it to.
Yeah, of course.
I've been playing those for about since 2019, and use those in the studio. And also we use some of our old like Les Pauls and stuff in the studio that we've used on records literally since our first records. I brought in our old guitars and wanted to get some of those tones and for some of the rhythms and things like that. And then did a lot of the leads on like the Kiesels and then Travis, you got your realm.
I'm a Balaguer guitar artist. I actually just released my latest signature model last week.
Right on.
Kind of see it there in the background, that gold one.
Yeah.
I've been working with them since about 2020, like just before the pandemic. And I absolutely love their guitars. I use some of my Balaguers on the recording as well. It's kind of, so sometimes, you know, when you finish a record, it's hard to remember what you did exactly, what sure. gear you used on what part, or which amp made it to the final cut, or, you know, stuff like that. Because when you're writing and recording, you know, it's just a whirlwind and, you know, you're just constantly focusing on making music, and the aspect of, you know, what gear did you use kind of falls by the wayside. It's just sure. like, dude, whatever sounded good at the time.
Of course. And how'd you guys get hooked? Like, how'd you get hooked up with Kiesel, and how'd you get hooked up with Balaguer?
Kiesel was initially, I have a company called Plugins that makes these keychain holders look like guitar amps that you like mount on the wall.
I know them very well from the amp.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's
your reps are very, very forward.
Yeah. It was probably me that came up to you. Via that, the company, Kiesel, the co-owner and founder of Plugins, Mike Strickland, he used to work over there years ago. So he knew Jeff Kiesel and was friendly with him. And we started doing merch stuff for them years ago and for, like, making t-shirts and stuff like that. And for about 5 years of doing this, he was kind of like, dude, I know you're with ESP and stuff, but like, I would love to just, you know, no strings attached, you know, pun intended. I'd love to make you a guitar.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, I'm with ESP, right? I just, you know, I can't, I've been with them for years.
Yeah.
And I finally got to a point in about 2019 where I felt, you know, it was time to part ways with ESP and move on to something different.
Sure.
That's when I went to Kiesel and said, I'd love to work with you. But the only thing is the shape that I use over at ESP, the EX shape. They had all these wild things that I loved about their brand, but they didn't have my shape. Uh-huh. He said, if you come over, like I'll make this shape for you. So I got to help, kind of design this shape, that like the hyperdrive, as you can see back over here, got to help come up with the shape of it and, help get the weights in the back of it to make it, be balanced and, got to be a part of the whole process, which was really neat. And
right
then, eventually my signature model is based around the hyperdrive. And then later on the Lightspeed, which is like the headless mini version of it, which is super cool. Super fun. I get to make a lot of wild guitars with my blood all over them, or bento box ones with sushi in them, and tequila bottle acoustic guitars over here.
Right on.
And, yeah, and all kinds of stuff.
Kiesel is the former Carvin, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they've Carvin. Yeah, it's and Jeff in particular is third generation Kiesel, and they're based in Escondido, so they're like an American brand, and they the whole family works on the guitars. Like, he's actually his daughter, son, they're like all in there, like working on the frets or like staining guitars or winding pickups. I mean, Jeff, one of the offerings that you can get if you want a more like exclusive extra awesomeness added to your car, your guitar, you can pay extra and you can have Jeff himself work on your guitar and do cool stuff to it. I always call him the Willy Wonka of guitars, because I'm like, dude, you just like his mind with it, because I have crazy ideas, and then he loves the challenge of like, how can I make this reality? And he pulls it off every time, so it's pretty fun.
I remember the Carvin catalogs in the late 70s and early 80s, and where you could like, for one thing, they had double necks just readily available. But you could also, like, you know, choose your woods, choose your finishes, choose your pickup combination for all the crazy guitars that they made. That's badass. And how about you, Travis? Fun.
Like Dan said, you know, we were both kind of shopping around for new guitar companies to work with. At the time, we were releasing a new record. It was the start of a new decade, so it's like, well, let's have a fresh start with the guitars too.
Uh-huh.
So. I was just, you know, scrolling through Instagram like I normally do. And most of the stuff that comes up on my feed is usually like Star Wars related stuff or guitars.
Sure.
It just their Hyperion model just caught my eye. And it was like, I was just kind of like, wow, like that guitar is awesome. So, you know, kind of fell down the rabbit hole, and then, you know, what, through their page, and like all their guitars was like, yep, I'd play that. So fast forward a few months later, I was at the NAMM show, and I had a couple friends who were in with the people at Balaguer. Uh-huh. So they told Joe Balaguer and his team that I'd be coming by just to say hi and introduce myself. And I met with Joe at NAMM and just kind of chopped it up with him for a little bit. And I asked him, you know, do you have like any kind of artist deal or, you know, something like that. And he already knew who I was, which kind of like surprised me, because I never go into any situation going, don't you know who I am? He was just right off the bat. Like, yeah, I mean, we'll give you, you know, hook you up with two custom models off the bat and, you know, see if you like them. And like that caught me off guard. I was not expecting that. Put in an order for a couple of customs and got them back, and they came out exactly how I wanted them, which was awesome. Because it's, when you're coming up with a custom guitar, you know, at first it seems like a dream, like,
sure,
you know, awesome. But then when you get down to it, it's not as easy as most people would think it is.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, It's a lot easier now because a lot of the companies have like their online configurator, so you can actually see what is going on. Whereas before, whatever you had in your head, when it came to fruition, it might not be what matched or what you were thinking of, and then that's all on you.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, after you just waited a couple of years for a guitar and it finally shows up and it's wrong and you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Which may or may have happened multiple times.
we've both had experience with that.
Not Balaguer.
Right, exactly. Joe Balaguer is like, you know, we'd be stoked if you want to make these your signature models. And so I was like, you don't have to twist my arm. I'm down. Right. So, that was in 2020, and I've been with them ever since, and they've been treating me like a king. The cool thing about these companies is that they're all, they're all smaller, a little bit more like grassroots, you know, which I think in this day and age, maybe it's because of like social media and there's more eyes on them. A lot of players are gravitating more toward those companies as opposed to like the huge, you know, like your Ibanez's, your ESPs, your Jackson's, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's also cool to be working with a company like that because they are not as huge. Like if I need to get a hold of somebody, I just literally text Joe Balaguer himself. Uh-huh. I don't have to jump through 5-6 hoops trying to get a hold of somebody to wait at least a week to get a reply back. It just makes life for us as guitar players way easier.
Yeah. Are you guys both playing 6 strings or 7 strings or?
Yeah, six.
Six?
Both right six.
Good. Yeah, anything past six, I'm like, I don't. Exactly. I don't know what to do with that. It's just,
and how about baritones? Do you guys use baritones at all?
Right now, like if we need to go to a lower tuning, the Quad Cortex has a transpose feature on it, which is pretty it sounds good. You know, sometimes when you use some kind of transpose feature on like a digital amp or something, like before it would sound kind of weird and a little
latency,
some latency. But they've, you know, like I said, the technology now is getting more and more advanced, so we've been relying on that. I actually did order a baritone from Balaguer a little while ago, so it should be I should have it pretty soon, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Right. So, I got it just to have it, just, you know, as far as like recording in the future. A lot of the stuff on our new record is drop B flat, drop A, which by today's standards isn't that low. Cause I mean, there's bands going to like, you know, double drop E and stuff like that, which is rad. So being that we're slowly but surely going lower and lower, I thought it would have been useful to have just that baritone handy.
Absolutely. Are the two of you and Kyle, are you guys like the core of the band, or is it how's the band structured? Was it you two that started the band?
It started essentially myself and our current singer Brandon and our ex-singer Alex.
Okay.
The three of us started as a punk band called Retribution back in 1997 or so. And we met in 1996 back in Yorba Linda, played in punk band for a little bit. And eventually our taste in music started to grow and evolve into listening to more like hardcore metal bands and stuff in our local scene.
Uh-huh.
So we then decided at that point, like maybe let's change our name and kind of go down a slightly different path than being a punk band, and changed our name in about 99. To Atreyu, and then based off a lot of bands that we knew at the time. We're getting the names for like sci-fi, horror, fantasy movies and stuff. So we're like, oh, maybe we'll look in that realm. So the movie Neverending Story came across the table, and there's a lot of really cool names in that movie alone. I mean, Falcor, Rockbiter, Atreyu, Artex.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a metal lineup, just that, you know, all the characters alone. Sounds like a Monsters of Rock festival or something.
Yeah,
been doing that. And then Travis, we met Travis about maybe a year later or so. He was working at Hot Topic with our singer at the time, Alex, going against the company rules where you're not allowed to be friends with the employees because they don't want people like stealing and stuff.
Uh-huh.
We had to keep it on the down low. There was no fraternizing between employees, but
yeah,
paid off.
Well, they Yeah, they doubled down and started a band together. Yeah. We're not just going to hang out. We're going to be in a band. So, like, yeah, that's Travis came on board because at the time I was just the guitar player. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of ideas that we had that cannot, you know, I can only do so many things at one time. And we needed someone else that could help with that as well as do the things that I'm not good at, which is being really, really attractive and ripped. So we got Travis to handle that part of it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And so who were your guys both together and separately? Like, were you, and I'll bring up a really old reference, but were like you guys for twin guitars, were you thinking Thin Lizzy? Were you thinking like Judas Priest, or was it something way beyond, way newer than that?
A little bit of both. I mean, some of it would be, I mean, for me, I love the Priest kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I love the Thin Lizzy, all that kind of harmonizing guitars, but also we were big fans of like the Gothenburg Swedish metal scene, like the Arch Enemies and the In Flames and all that kind of stuff, At the Gates. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that kind of influence as well.
Yeah.
So the combination of all that, I mean, Travis also has a lot of kind of 90s metal, 80s metal influences.
How dare you? That's cool. And so personally, like, who were your guitar players? Like, who were the guys that, you know, inspire you to play guitar initially?
For me, very first off was Billy Joe from Green Day. I was 12 years old. Dookie record came out. They were that Basket Case video was all over MTV. And I just was at that age where I was starting to get really, really curious about music. And it was just kind of this new attraction that I just could not get away from and needed more of. And so that was kind of the gateway. But as far as the stuff that like really made me like want to like step up and like try to be more of a defined of who I am now player, I'd say Eddie Van Halen, of course. You know, everybody has to at least like some Eddie. Brian May from Queen. I love just the melody and the way he plays.
Sure. And the tone.
But even some of, the tone. But even, I mean, I liked, like I said, a lot of the 80s guys. So, I mean, I liked like Warren DeMartini from Rat. I love the way he's playing. Anybody who's got a little bit of a bluesy swagger to what they're doing, but shreddy at the same time. And also, you know, some clean, good melody to it. So it's not just pure wanking. I like that balance, you know, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Have you had an opportunity to meet Warren?
Not Warren. I met his daughter years ago.
Oh, really? Okay.
I met my coolest experience with any of that would be with Joey Allen from the band Warrant.
Okay.
I mean, it's a very long story. So I'm not going to tell a story right now, but long story short, we released a magazine thing that I did like an interview for like 2006.
Okay.
And I mentioned their band in it, and they were trying to get back together at the time. So he reached out to me and we ended up hanging out and come to find out that he was my neighbor and lived across the street from me.
No way.
Which was super wild. Yeah. And I ended up becoming friends with him still to this day. Like we'd go play like golf and get sushi and he'd take me to shows and introduce me to like the dudes in Skid Row and stuff like that. this is like the coolest thing ever. This is all I ever wanted, you know, to be in the club, you know, whatever club, this imaginary club of just hanging out with dudes from the 80s that shred a guitar. And let me hang around them and, you know, think I'm cool.
Yeah. How about you, Travis?
For me, Metallica was the band that like kicked everything off for me.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time trying to figure out like how to play those songs. I was failing miserably because at the time, like I had zero skill set on guitar. So like that was a huge challenge, but so like James Hetfield, Kirk Hammett, I learned a lot of like the palm muting techniques, like all the thrash techniques from listening to, you know, like Slayer and, like Marty, I still love Marty Friedman, specifically his Megadeth stuff, because his lines, they never really fall on the beat. They're always like either ahead of it or behind it.
Sure.
It's like, it's interesting to me. And his right hand is so weird. It's just kind of like a talking point that, you know, but like Andreas Kisser from Sepultura, like a lot of the stuff that he does is very like very dissonant, but beautiful at the same time.
Yeah.
And the dude just looks cool. Like I've never seen anybody play a Rhodes that low on his body and look that cool. But yeah, like Dan said, like, I mean, if you pick up an electric guitar, you can't not be influenced by like, you know, Edward Van Halen, obviously, like the first tapping thing I learned how to do was obviously Eruption.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, there's, I could go on and on. Like even like dudes like Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, even though I don't play anything like him, there's some guitar players that you can just tell by either watching or listening to them that they were kind of put on this earth to do that. Oh, yeah. And he's one of them. Like sure. The guitar is kind of like an extension of him.
Yep.
Dimebag as well. He's one of those dudes that, you know, you hear him play two or three notes, you know, it's him. He's one of those dudes again, who you could tell, like he was put on this earth to play a guitar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Did you ever have an opportunity to meet Kirky or Jim James?
I never have. I do know a number of people who have, and I hate them all.
Yeah, you should.
I am extremely jealous. Yeah.
And so, as far as the band, where is the band's biggest draw? Like, are you guys big in Europe, big in Japan, big in Asia in general, or where is your biggest draw?
Honestly, I'd say a top three places are probably Australia, the UK, and Germany.
Oh, right on.
And then,
that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, those are put over those are our top three. I mean, the US, we do really well in like certain markets, you know, like there's certain markets where we do similar numbers that we're doing in like, you know, the UK and Europe and stuff.
Uh-huh. What markets are those? But,
like major ones, if we're doing like playing like an Orange County or okay. like, you know,
yeah.
maybe even sometimes random ones, like up in like Montana, like Bozeman, Montana, right or on. Like, well, there's been some random places where we'll have some big shows or we headlined, a fair in Wyoming and like Cheyenne, Wyoming yeah. or something like that. Like about a year and a half ago. And it was like one of those things when we were like, is anybody going to be at this?
Yeah,
like, who's
exactly.
going to see, we've never even played Wyoming before. Is anybody in Cheyenne, Wyoming going to come watch Atreyu?
And
there was
have,
like, there's probably like 3,000 people there, man. It was, yeah. it was incredible. It was like one of our, there was a fireworks show.
I mean, oh,
it was
right
like a,
on.
It was like a Disneyland
yeah, yeah.
15 minute long, like just fire. We were like, what? I didn't expect any of this. It was yeah. incredible.
Speaking of Disneyland, do you guys play at Disneyland occasionally?
No. Never played at Disneyland, no.
No.
But I have.
Well, we played the House of Blues.
Okay.
Yeah.
Used to be on the Disney property, but then they moved it across the street. But we have played it while it was still on Disney property. So that's about as close as we've gotten, as well as the House of Blues in Orlando, which I believe is on Disney property
yeah,
as well.
See that? Disney yeah. adjacent. You guys are Disney yeah. adjacent.
Well, actually, and we were on Hollywood Records for two albums,
oh, right.
which is Disney's record label.
And my first job ever as a teenager was at Disneyland.
Right on. What'd you do at Disneyland?
I was in outdoor vending. So basically I sold like the churros and the popcorn.
Yeah, popcorn. Big deal. No. That's a big deal yeah. at Disneyland. What about
Disney looks good. Disney looks good on a resume.
Yeah. And what about corn dogs? You sell those?
Didn't sell the corn dogs.
Okay.
Yeah, it was mostly pretzels, churros, and popcorn.
Right on.
That's why we hired Travis. We're like, what's your resume look like? And he's all Hot Topic with this dude, and I made churros at Disneyland. We're like, you're in, dude.
You're hired.
That's all we needed. You're hired. Who cares about the guitar?
So when's the tour start? The upcoming tour for the new record?
A couple days here, like a week from now, I believe. Right? Oh. The
Wisconsin?
15th.
We have a couple shows of our own, a couple headlining shows of our own before the Seven Dust Tour starts.
Okay.
But I think the first official date of the Seven Dust Tour is on the 20th, I believe, in Indianapolis, I want to say. I could be completely wrong. Don't quote me on that. I'm terrible.
You just quoted yourself.
True. Yeah, yeah. But
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, we got a couple shows before that as well.
Yeah.
Doing our own headliners.
Right on. It's because
we have a couple of festival shows within the tour as well.
Okay. And the festival shows, are you guys doing any of the big festivals in Europe?
Not this year.
Okay.
Not this year. I think we have something we might be doing in July. I don't know if it's announced yet, though.
Okay. Outside of music, what do you guys do for fun?
Want to go first, Travis?
Yeah. Just mundane everyday stuff. Like, in the morning I usually go for a run.
Okay.
So I'm outdoors getting some sun, getting yeah. some vitamin D. Just hanging out with the wife and cat. And, I'm a bit of a cinephile. So I'm always trying to check out new movies.
Right
and, I'm a bit of a gamer.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, just boring non-rock star stuff.
That's okay. That's okay. I'm still going to call you a rock star, whether you like it or not.
I'll take it.
And how about you, Dan?
More recently, I've been getting into just whether it be learning different instruments or I picked up the saxophone a couple of years ago, just to change things up and just get a different, learn a different language, a different musical language.
Sure.
Just trying to practice a little bit more piano and just going to diversify my, my playing. And, also craft cocktails have been a kind of a thing that I've been on a kick for a while here lately, where just finding places that do it, you know, finding like speakeasies and really kind of high end, places that know how to make a good drink, but, also doing it at home. I've been learning the craft myself and learning how to make drinks correctly. And, it's a fun process and it, saved me a lot of money than trying to go out to these expensive places and buy fancy things all the time.
They are expensive. That's what's crazy is they're freaking expensive.
They are. Yeah. So we're a quarter of the price. I just make them at home and, I can make them just as good.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you guys. I really appreciate your time. I wish you the best of luck on your tour. Safe travels and stay out of trouble.
Cheers. Awesome. Thank you, James. Appreciate it.
Okay. Talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Later, guys.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.